Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to the second edition of my retro Rahulastupper, looking back in no particular order, in no chronological sense, to some of my old favourites from this vast back catalogue of Rahulastuppers that we have got. If you count the Edinburgh ones, there's probably 500 or so episodes. If you're new to the podcast, we want to give you a chance to see some of the absolute hear some of the absolute classic episodes and some of my favourites. People often ask me who my favourite guests are, and it's very difficult to choose one, which is why I'm going to be doing this every single week. But this week's guest is possibly the favourite guest I have ever had on Rahulastuppa. For me personally, at least, I think. And there's amazing competition for this role. The most naturally charming and funny person that has been on the show and possibly that I've ever met. It's Bob Mortimer. You know that because it was in the description. So lovely to get him on board. It was a long time ago now. I'm really hoping we can get him back pretty soon. He seems keen to come on, but he's a very busy man. So hopefully there might be a Rahulastuppa with Bob later in the year. But what I liked about this one was just the ease of doing it, I suppose, and the lovely moments we found in this. I think the bit that sticks out for me is the realisation that we were probably both in the charming city of Middlesbrough at the same time and managed to work out the route from my grandparents' door to his childhood home. And it's a weird thing to think, isn't it, that back in the 1970s, 1980s, we may have walked past each other in Middlesbrough city centre or even just Roman Road in Middlesbrough. I know you're going to love this one. I don't think there's much more to say about it other than Bob is absolutely just what you see is what you get. One of the nicest men in the world. I was going to say in show business, but that's not difficult. He's one of the nicest men in the world. I'm in love with him. I hope to have his children one day. And at the very least, I hope to get him back on Rahulastapa very soon. If you enjoy these podcasts, why not tell your friends about them? If this is a great place to start, you can direct them to these Friday released retro episodes to get them in the mood, and then hopefully they will then work their way through the back catalogue themselves. Please feel free to do that. Every listen with the adverts is a little tiny penny more in the pot for us to make more podcasts. Now let's sit back, relax, and enjoy one of the really great Rahulastapas. Thanks very much to the comedic talents of Mr. Bob Mortimer. Ready? Now we're about to start, George. You let's pray and record. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just walked up 197 steps at the Covent Garden Tube. It's more than you think it's going to be. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! Hello, London! Thank you. Love to be back. Should have killed me last year. I'm back. Welcome to Rich Harry's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cool kids have started calling it recently, Rahulastapa. Oh, Rahulastapa, they call it, the cool people. So it's lovely to be here. Lots of things have happened since I've been officially at the Leicester Square Theatre. I've had a human child has emerged out of my wife's vagina. It's one of the most terrifying, terrifying things I've ever seen. It meant to be the most beautiful day of your life. It is absolutely fucking horrific. If you hate the person you're married to, then have a baby with them, because you will be delighted at the pain. And then seeing a human head coming out of your wife, it's not what you imagine it's going to be, Andy. It's not as good as you think. And thank you to everyone who contributed to the Kickstarter campaign that has keeping us going. That means we can film, so thank you. If you were one of those people who contributed, thank you very much. If not, then maybe you can contribute to the next series, because we'll have to do the same thing again for the next one. But it went well. We hit our target, but Chris Evans, not that one, forgot about VAT, so we actually didn't quite make enough money. That's okay. I just won't. Why, my baby just won't eat. That's all right for this autumn. What was I going to say? So, yes... I don't know if you were on Twitter. There's lots of things happened. I was on Twitter and I noticed Lord Sugar, who I follow on Twitter. If you don't follow him, I do retweet quite a lot of what he says. He got onto Twitter to ask people on Twitter to give him the name for his autobiography. I don't know if you saw, which is pretty cheap as far as, again, I know I've asked you all for money, but that is a different thing. And I came up with some very good names for his autobiography. I thought Firing Blanks would be quite a good... I thought that would be quite a good title. Especially if in the autobiography it was revealed that he was also impotent. Well, that is the... I thought... I quite like convoluted puns, so I thought Aspoo full of sugar. It's like a spoonful of sugar, but Aspoo, which it'll only really work if he reveals in the autobiography that he is suffering from some kind of rectal diabetes, and then that will... But if he does, that's a very good title for it. But I actually thought the best title for Lord Sugar's autobiography would be I Remind Me of Me at That Age, which I think... He didn't choose any of those. I can't believe he went for unscripted, which I think is quite insulting to all of his many scriptwriters. You'd seriously think that show isn't scripted. Looks good on paper, but so does fish and chips. That kind of skill. So yeah, I have got a tiny daughter. It's amazing. I'm really loving it. She's beautiful. She's called Phoebe. She's 3.5 months old now. She's just started to laugh at stuff, which is, as a comedian, is absolutely fascinating to see a sense of humour developing. It's kind of weird what she laughs at sometimes. It's hard to... I might try out some of the material on you, because it kills with her, so I don't know if it's going to work. The thing that really made her first laugh that made me... And she got... The first time she laughed at something that I think she understood, we were giving... She's teething a bit, so we gave her this kind of powder that you put in your
in their mouths with their teeth. They just kind of their gums, and they kind of chew on it. But she'd never, up to this point, she'd only had cow pollen and milk. So this was the first solid she ever had. She put it in, she went, and then me and my wife laughed, and then she saw us laughing. And she sort of laughed along, but in the way of kind of going, yeah, this is crazy, and it's just so like me, isn't it? That what's going on with this? I eat milk. Why am I eating this? So that was quite good fun. And then I really made her laugh the next day by singing Frère Jacques to her, but changed most of the words to ding dong. It really made her laugh. So I thought I'd try that on you and see if it makes you laugh. I don't know what she found amusing. I don't think she understands that dong means penis. I don't think that was. I think it was the onomatopoeia that she enjoyed. But you go, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. I can't even do it now. What's that, Fred Jacket? Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. Can you sing? Can you sing? Sing along with Daddy, sing along with Daddy. Ding dong, ding. Not gone as well, but then she found that funny for about 5 minutes and then never again. I think she was laughing at that. Anyway, so that's been very enjoyable. But look, we're going to crack on. Oh, I must, because of the Kickstarter thing, there is now I'm contractually obliged to do lots of things. I would like to thank Duncan Thorley, who has paid for this entire episode for advertising Maximum Whimsy, which is a podcast sitcom about Minecraft. I mean, it sounds terrible, but thanks for the money. Like Minecraft, you know. This is why most people won't sponsor this podcast, I discovered. He did say I could take the business. No, he's a lovely guy, and he's very proud of the end board he designed, which is on episode 3 onwards. Look out for Maximum Whimsy. I do pick it up at the beginning of the show as well, so you can look out for that. And also, I have to say, I did promise some people that I would call people a fucking idiot, basically, is what most of them seem to have gone for. So Adam asked me to say Lawrence Crook is a fucking idiot for chickening out of calling Nima Parvini a fucking idiot. So there we go, that is done. So it's just I'm being paid money to call by proxy someone a fucking idiot. They could be anyone. They could be a really nice person. They could have just died or something. And then the papers would get hold of it. And Richard Herring's called Nima Parvini a fucking idiot. Don't even know who that is. So, look, we're going to crack on. Will you please welcome my very first guest this season? Can't believe we've got him. It just took me tweeting him and asking him if he would come on. he's probably best known as the host of the Radio 4 pilot, Bob Says Who, from about 1992. It was script written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee. Will you please welcome Bob Mortimer, ladies and gentlemen? Bob Mortimer! Hello. You can sit down here. You can sit down with me if you like. You can sit on the same chair as me. Bob's brought his own lager in with him.
Yes, thank you very much. I have. Thank you for noticing that.
It's good. It's good.
It's 3.4%, which is the healthy cut-off point.
Is it?
If you're interested in that kind of thing.
Is it? Isn't the healthy cut-off point not drinking lager?
No, I don't agree with that.
So do you remember Bob Says Who, the Radio 4 pilot?
You mentioned to me backstage. Yeah. No, I have no memory of it whatsoever. It was real.
It was almost a prototype of Shooting Stars. I created Alan Partridge. I've never seen a penny of that.
I created Alan Partridge.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, you should get some money as well.
Yeah.
I've never seen a penny of that.
And I was a big lad once when I was working on inventing Peter Kay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I only got as far as the size. I saw him when he was 16, 17.
Yeah.
I was judging So You Think You're Funny in Edinburgh. And he came on doing his, Fanta, Panda Pops. Sorry, I don't mean to be disparaging, but he'd say brand things, wouldn't he?
You can't help but be disparaging, can you? Just by giving his act.
That's not to me. But I remember there were different times because there was like a judging panel went up and I said, well, I thought the big lad, the Panda Pops lad, was the best. I remember the Channel 4 commissioner then said, Yeah, but all he did was tell jokes. do you remember those times? Yeah.
Well, it's sort of a little bit like that now at the moment. He writes, it's worth reading his autobiography, Peter Kay. It's fascinating because he really writes from the point of view of everything I did was amazing. Right. Or, and he never had a bad gig, so he writes about that and says how brilliant he was. But he writes about how when he was at school, he was the Cowardly Lion in Wizard of Oz, and he missed one of the rehearsals because it was some family thing, and they said, oh, you're just going to have to sit that dance out because, you weren't at the rehearsal. And he was annoyed that everyone else was dancing and he wasn't. So he got up and danced up and down the aisle and larked around and ad-libbed a dance. And he goes, everyone was laughing, everyone loved it. Kind of go, I don't think the other people in the Wizard of Oz were enjoying it that much. Peter, but no, he's a lovely guy.
Have you heard the one about him buying his wife the Renault Clio?
No.
Second-hand Renault Clio. Well, I don't know. Do we leave it at that?
Yeah. You can tell me later. I think we can fill in the gaps. I very much enjoyed his car share.
He didn't insure it.
He didn't.
So she couldn't give it a go on her actual birthday.
I bet she found it hilarious though when that happened. So Bob says who?
Insurance? What's that about? I remember that.
It's good to be able to remember things. I can remember things but no one else. I can remember Bob says who and you can't remember it. So that's why I'm fucked as an observational comedian.
Yes, I did not remember it. I'm not laughing. Had you made me remember it, I'd have found it hilarious. Yeah.
The only question I remember was Jason Donovan said there are too many broken hearts in the world, but how many too many are there? That was one of the questions that you had to ask Sonia.
It didn't fly.
It didn't fly. Some reason it didn't. Caroline Leddy was the producer of it. He went on to be a big wig at Channel 4. And Stuart Lee and Rich Hay wrote it. Bob Mortimer posted it. Sonia was in it. I can't remember who else was. Do you remember Sonia? She did the Eurovision Song Contest. Sonia.
Little power pack. Her energy like defied her size.
There. It was, yeah.
Sunita just goes on and on. You know, like forever.
Yeah. So you are from Middlesbrough.
Do you remember Sunita?
Simon Cowell does. So it's. You were born in Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
You were born in Acklam in Middlesbrough.
I was born in Linthorpe in Middlesbrough.
Linthorpe.
In my mum's house.
My grandparents lived like a quarter of a mile from where you were born.
You kidding?
In Clepstone Avenue.
Clepstone.
If you come out of Tollesbury Road and turn left into Harrow Road.
I know Harrow Road.
Yeah, then right into Roman Road.
Yes.
And then left into Emerson Avenue. Actually, it's the other way around. Then right into Tollesbury. So it's... You from your house, you've come out. Turn left.
I've got to turn right into Emerson.
Left, right, left into Roman Road. Right into Harrow Road, and then it's Clepstone Avenue. They were then number 11, Clepstone Avenue.
But and do you know who else was lives on that street?
No,
Chris Rea. You know the gravel boys. No, I promise you.
On Clepstone Avenue on your road.
Yeah. He lived on Clapstone.
Did he?
Yeah. If it's the first right after
ever. My mum and dad once saw you walking along on Roman Road or Harrow Road. They can't remember if it was a few years ago.
Yeah. Roman Road. Roman Road is very straight, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So that's good. So all my family from Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough is
one
of the...
You're kidding me,
aren't you? I'm not. All my family, my grandparents, both sets of grandparents, my parents met in Middlesbrough. My dad was... we were trying to work out if you went to the same school, but I don't think you did go to the same... I mean, my dad's a little bit older than you.
Is he Catholic?
No.
Well, we might have then. Yeah. There was quite a split in them days.
Is there, yeah. And you support Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
And as they did. Did you ever go to Rosebery Topping?
Of course I went to Rosebery Topping. Are your grandparents still alive?
No, they're all dead. Oh, thanks for bringing that up.
They
had a good knock. They'd be pretty old now.
Yeah.
My grandma, my last one died a couple of years ago. She was 102.
Wow.
She had a good knock. Which for Middlesbrough is amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing.
Middlesbrough is one of the most horrible places. I can say this.
It's one of
the really most depressing and horrible cities in the world.
Yeah,
I've ever been to. Rosebery Topping is delightful.
Yeah, I mean, it has a kind of beauty because like, when I was young, the coastline was 8 miles of chemical and steelworks, yeah. Which did have a certain beauty. But yeah, it's not picture postcard type thing.
Because I spent a lot of time, you know, I wasn't born there, but I think my sister was born there. But we'd moved, and I was in Somerset by the time I can really remember. So we would drive up every summer and see the grandparents. So I spent a lot of time in Middlesbrough.
And do you remember the lights from the works and everything?
I remember it being, my granddad worked in the park when in the Captain Cook Museum. Did you ever go to that?
Right, yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be mainly just us. I bought Football Manager 1982, one of the first Football Manager cassettes for my computer in Middlesbrough Towns in W. H. Smith's.
Wow. Do you remember Dovecot Sales Rooms?
No.
Oh, that's a shithole, Richard. But people remember it fondly. Yeah. Yeah, sort of, how did they get away with that?
I did come across a newspaper article about you choosing your 7 favourite places in Middlesbrough in a local paper, and one of the comments is, he loves it so much he does anything but live here. Which is just typical of Middlesbrough, I think. He moved away as soon as he could. Yeah, he fucking did, and so would you have done it. But it's lovely. We can say this because we love Middlesbrough. Were you a bin man in Middlesbrough?
I was a bin man, yeah. I did Grove Hill Estate and Sutton Estate. And it was in the days of cast iron bins then.
Right.
So it was very much a man's job. I was very much admired. You know, like on that Eric Cantona advert?
Yeah.
Are you a bin man? Do you know that?
Sounds good though. My granddad did so many different jobs, and now suddenly think, was he a bin? You might have worked. Did you ever meet Don Hannon?
Don Hannon.
No, Don. Do you remember?
No,
Don
he was
Hannon.
In Miami Vice. He's not considered.
Don Hannon. Good. I look a bit like him. He had kind of, but he had his hair was grey, unlike mine. Well, that's because he was old, I suppose. He probably wasn't grey his whole life. Anyway, that's the Middlesbrough-based stuff. But do you think there is a... the North East has brought a lot of very esoteric and, you know, Viz and you and Vic have created this kind of very different kind of comedy to Southerners, I suppose. And people like me are Oxbridge-educated idiots like me.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something in the North East that's inherently amusing?
I don't think so, Richard. Maybe. I mean, I like... Whenever I go back up there, I get in tune with their humour very quickly.
Yeah.
Do you know many Middlesbrough people?
No, they're all dead now.
All the original. They're like the Tomorrow people. I think there might be something in it. Like, we haven't got that, like, loud, brash, scousy sort of thing going on.
No.
Or the... the one where you leave stage and people say, hey, he's pretty clever, that guy. He's made me laugh, but we haven't got that thing. I don't know.
Freya lived on Pepstone Avenue?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
I used to play with him down the road. He's a bit older than me, isn't he?
He's 2 years older than me, because he's Catholic. He went to St. Patrick's.
Right.
The whole Rhea family did. They're very successful family, a little... I can see they're nice houses, Clepston.
All right, yeah. I mean, for Middlesbrough, they're
they're not bad. Yeah, they've got upstairs and everything.
My poorer grandparents lived in Benson Avenue, which is
Benson. That sounds like it's in town.
Yeah, sort of nearer to town.
Nearer to
town. And I went back there because it had been a long time since I'd really been there because they mostly died a while ago. But all of it seems like the Benson Street was when I went back in my mind because I was a kid. It's like big, big house with these tiny little terrace.
Yeah.
Like one down, two up, kind of.
Yeah, house. I mean, my mate's trying to flog one now from up there. It's 42 grand, you know, it's incredible, isn't it?
That is incredible.
Do you want it?
Yeah, I might buy it. I can buy that with the. Yeah. And we're moving house. But you used to be a solicitor. I was going to ask you if you could help me. We're moving house because it's really expensive. Can you fill in the forms and stuff?
I probably could.
Could you?
To be honest with you, but you wouldn't necessarily own the house after I've done it. if that bothers you. You know, I bought a few. I remember I bought one in East Dulwich for some sort of lovely couple. Had all the right ideas about life. You know, nice people. And I bought them it, and I forgot to get them to sign the mortgage deed. Just not, like, and but which means they could have the house for free. It's a settled land act, 1925. It has to be written on. So I got me mate Kingy, who did an act for us, which is Dr. King and his flying rabbits. And I put a fucking... It was a Leeds Permanent Building Society mortgage. So me and Kingy thought, you'll need a trilby. Because if it's Leeds Permanent... So he went round with the mortgage deed and did it as a, like, hello. We just wondered if you're happy with the service and if you could just sign this document. And they signed it, but I can remember because I was a lawyer, it's a very, like, sheltered thing. You can't think that there's anything else you could do. And I would have lost, I would have been struck off.
Right.
God, it was a frightening day. No, it was. I didn't masturbate at anything and I was young.
Can you get into trouble retrospectively for this? Can you be sent to prison now?
No, I don't. I wonder.
Yeah. I wonder what you find out. It'd be annoying for that, for the couple, when they discovered they could have had a free house.
Could have had it for free, yeah. Mind you, they'll be sitting on a fortune now, won't they? They'll be living it up.
But the problem is, you have you buy a house in London, and then I'm trying to sell my house in London, but then you have to buy somewhere else for the money.
Yeah.
So it's not, it doesn't mean anything. Just everything's more expensive, unless you go and live in Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough, yeah.
I could buy the whole of Benson Street. I mean, I might do that. I could buy the whole of Benson Street, Lord, and Benson. Raise it to the just drive through in a digger and knock it all down.
If you could find someone called Hedges to buy it and call it Tobacco Road.
So it's kind of fascinating to me that you, when you met Vic Reeves, Jim Moyer, you were kind of in the audience of his show. That's how you got together with him.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really remember it very well, but I mean, you say it was a show. It was a room above a pub in Deptford, and it was him and one table of his mates.
Yeah.
And Jim's a bit of a show off, and he was just doing his thing for his mates.
Right.
And actually, Dr. King with Flying Rabbits, he was a mutual friend who took me to this. So I sat on the table of friends.
Yeah.
And I have no memory of how I got involved in it, because everyone was involved in it. I think I went up and gave him a check for his work he'd done for really, really hungry kids or something. that kind of thing. And because he's not an easy chap to meet.
No.
Jim, he's very shy. And of course he suffers from that thing that if you're on the telly you're not allowed to be shy because it's interpreted as being really rude.
Yeah.
So, and he's very I didn't get to know him for a while. He'd sort of say, I couldn't remember, he'd say, would you come on and give us a check? I can't really remember the first time I went up there but we started writing it in his kitchen maybe 4 or 5 weeks after I'd seen him that first time, because we did a different show every week.
That's sort of interesting because that's so different than the rest of the comedy scene. So this was like the late 80s, early 90s.
It was about 88, something like that. Yeah.
So I mean, the rest of the comedy scene, me and Stu moved to London in 89, 90, and we started doing stand up. But you would go to clubs and you'd do the same thing at every club until you got more gigs, and you were completely doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Sort of separate, and then by sort of chance and happenstance, that sort of.
Well, it was the same audience every week, but growing. But you couldn't, you had to do something new for them every week.
Well, you say that, Bob. you wait till we get onto the emergency questions.
See, are you just hoping the next guest was from Middlesbrough as well?
The next guest is very similar to you in a lot of ways, but she isn't. I don't think she's from Middlesbrough. I actually don't know where she's from. Probably I might ask her. No, I've done a radio show with her for a long time. It's been a lot of fun researching this, because I've been going back and watching lots of Reeves and Mortimer from various eras. And I was saying backstage, I mean, it's so much its own thing, and it's so different than other stuff, and it's so stupid, a lot of it, but there's a lot of... So you're just laughing at the ridiculousness of it, the absurdity of it. There's a lot of... What I really like was someone sent me a link to the Stars in Their Eyes sketch you did, which has lots of funny stuff in it, but the thing that really made me laugh was that the door that they came through in Stars in Their Eyes was too low, so everyone had to come, and it's not... And you don't make a big thing of it, it's just like the door, the Stars in Their Eyes door, it's just everyone has to bend down to get through it. And it's one of the funny. It just was making me laugh so much. And it's such a subtle throwaway little joke in there. So there's sort of so much depth and thought that I think's gone into it.
Yeah, look, we did used to really write those things. So, like, we would... You've done it yourself, Richard, when, like, in those shows that you really care about. So we would take every instruction. So it comes to a door and not leave it there. I think, well, what about this? Do you know what I mean? And say, well, let's make it too small and then try and do every little detail. I mean, we even put... I don't know if you remember that one, but if you noticed that Matthew Kelly had a set of gallows on his head. And we I don't know whether like that was a portent or something. But yeah, we're just, you know, like, we're just looking, when, do you remember those youthful days when gave a shit and you thought, like, so we thought, what, you know, what would, you know, something about him having gallows on his head seemed right for that
character. It's sort of interesting because I think absurd, that kind of absurdist or surreal, I don't think it's really surreal humour, but it's sort of absurd humour. It's, everyone goes, well, it sort of looks like it's easy because it's just saying some things that don't link together, but actually to get it right, I was listening to you talk, you and Vic, being you interviewing Vic in that Radio 4 show where the chain reaction thing, and he said you were wearing Speedos and an old bus conductor's ticket machine and nothing else. And that is just like such, but that's such two brilliant things. It just conjures up such an amazing image. But like, why would you think of a bus conductor's ticket machine? And that? So it's very hard to be absurd because your brain follows patterns, so it's actually deliberately, and it feels very ad-libbed a lot of those things where you are just messing around.
Yeah, I mean they're not. It's like with people, you know, like especially with the big night out, that was like every little pretend laughing at each other or forgetting our lines was all very rehearsed, really. Because I think when you're being so indulgent as to do stuff that just makes you laugh, and you never had that thought, will anyone else laugh? You know, you've got to present it with a certain lightness that people might say, I quite like these fellas. You know, they seem all right. They're having a bash, and get a bit of sympathy rather than rather than get them straight down that line, which is so easy with us to say, sort of like, who do you think you are? And I don't like these two fellas.
Yeah, I think that you are likable, because it's got this homemade feel about it. But then there's a real craft beneath it when you watch. So the trick is to make it look like bumbling and insane, and then you suddenly look at it and go, oh my god, there's a lot of work's gone into this.
Yeah,
and it's really, really hard. I just think it's that you do see acting, you see stand-ups who try to be surreal, and it just often is just it's boring. I mean, I say to you, sometimes if you're in the wrong mood as a viewer, your stuff is really irritating and makes you quite angry. That's just times, and it's going on for ages. Going, oh fuck off. And then you can then the next day go and watch the same thing and go, this is just amazing. I mean, I remember watching The Big Night Out and just being completely blown away by, because it was so different than.
Yeah, but you're right. It's irritating as well. If you're in the wrong mood or it's not your your bag, you know. Like we, I don't know. It's I always found it very funny. So we went along with it, and no one stopped us yet. So,
well, that's. I mean, there is the thing. You really have such an amazing body. It's one of those things. I think, oh, you know, there's reason more than this and this. But actually, when you look at the body of work that you've created and the consistency where both of you have worked together and apart, it's like it's a massive body of work for 25 years with really no respite. And some things have become much more famous than others, and some things. But something like Catterick, I think, which a lot of people wouldn't remember or didn't see. It was a completely different thing again. It was an amazing
business. I mean, that's a favourite of ours, Catterick. We always like to... Catterick and a series we did called Bang Bang. And funny enough, a Saturday night thing we did for BBC One that was called Families at War. They're the three that
was Families? Was Families at War like a game show with a sort of generation game thing?
It was... we'd get two families and we would think of a skill that they might have, which we thought was funny, like that I can't hardly remember them, that they could change light bulbs in one jump. And then we'd get the family and we'd say, are you willing to pretend to the British public that you can change light bulbs? And, you know, I mean, that's the way telly is that is, and we'd get families who were willing to come up and say, yes, I can... I think it was one woman said that she could she could iron on moving surfaces. that was the challenge we gave her. Look, Mrs. Whoever, Mrs. Peacock, are you willing to say that you can iron on a moving surface? And to get on telly, they said, yeah, yeah, right, yeah. Of course I will. So we had a motorised ironing board. And yes, it was Saturday night thing. And then the family that won went into something called the Cubiscus, where they were dressed as a spider and they had to pick gifts out of this cage. Whilst Jim, for some reason, I think because he wasn't involved in this bit. It's always a delight for me because I have nothing to do with these things. We did a thing called Catrick. And if anyone remembers it, he looks exactly like Peter Sutcliffe. And there was never any suggestion, any script or any meeting where he looked like Peter Sutcliffe. And on the first day of filming, he fucking emerged. And says, what do you think of this thing? And then in the moment, you go for it. And then you're committed because it's on tape. And then you're like, fucking hell, it's been so long. But like, so when I would be the spider, which the family manipulated to pick up Hoovers and shit. And Jim took it upon himself to stand by this cage, shouting, "I am the cockroach." But. I mean, I think we were really fond of it because that was on at 6 o'clock on Saturday night, obviously, yeah. One.
What a shame, because that's such a perfect Saturday night thing. And so Shooting Stars obviously proves that you can make that work to a mass audience. But that's Saturday night TV, I mean, it's become so kind of boring and anodyne, hasn't it,
yeah.
In comparison to that. But that's sort of the perfect...
It was really good format, Saturday. Yeah. It was a good show.
I mean, it's better than Noel Edmonds. No, but even Noel Edmonds, that was sort of a bit anarchic and stupid. You know, there was something... You know, he had a lot of paedophiles, as it turned out. I was did lots of gotchas on them. I would say, you know, maybe he should have got them for some the actual crimes they committed. But... And you never killed anyone, right, when you did Families at War? So
I've never killed anyone on screen. I'm not that tough.
People disappointed. People disapproving. Oh, they never... Not like our hero, Noel Edmonds.
Would you ever get a killer on? That'd be fascinating.
Onto this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they'd served their time. Or if they
exactly.
hadn't yet...
Exactly. That's right.
If they hadn't yet been caught. I might have done it. Might very well have done it. That's
good.
The kind of thing a killer would ask me, in fact. Did you ever get a serial killer who'd never been caught onto your show? Is that of interest? Whose friend dressed up as Peter Sutcliffe? So you fought Les Dennis.
I did, in
a boxing match.
Yeah.
And you beat him.
According to the judges, I beat him. I felt I beat him as well. Yeah. I thought I was a lot fitter, a lot quicker, had quicker hands, used the ring better. But I also fought Darren Day.
Did you?
Yeah, because Darren Day, this was something called celebrity boxing that I did. And Darren Day, he said he'd do it, but he said, I just want to warn you that I'm kickboxing champion, like ninja type, so just be a bit careful. So they do get, the BBC get worried about these things. Well, so I said, well, I'll fight him. No, I'm not a tough guy. I just thought, well, you know, that's the only way we'll find out. And I had a fight with him, and he was just like lemon curd or something. He was just, I'd hesitate to say a lady, but anyway. But also we had a problem. We did one with Ricky Gervais fighting Grant Bovey.
Yeah.
And we were training Ricky Gervais, and he said he didn't need to train, he was just going to kick his head in. So they were going to stop the fight, because they just worried, you know, because there was a lot of concern. They pulled it in the end because of concerns about people getting hurt and so on.
Yes, for so it's quite a dangerous show.
So we asked it, it came to a point with the trainer that's now turned into a lady, Frank Maloney.
Oh, yeah.
Frank and his brother said, well, we're going to pull it. But I said, well, what if I fight him to see if he can cope with, you know, just whether he can cope with it. So I had a fight with Ricky Gervais
right.
and in a gym above the old Kent Road. And I did fucking laugh because he... I was smoking and I'm not fit, so I wore a T-shirt. But Ricky was taking it by... He came out topless. And fuck, he was big. Fucking hell. Do you remember him for the shit? And he kicked 7 shades out of me. No, he really did. I've got that on film and it's he won't let us show it, though. It's funny, though. But anyway...
So he basically made some underground fight club stuff. With this weird mixture of sort of slightly cool and really weird celebrities fighting each other. Got to bring that back. That sounds... Got to get that on.
Yeah,
we do it on the internet now. BBC can't stop you.
They just can't touch me, can they? Yeah. It all gets a bit creepy, though. That was it was the government that stopped us.
Yeah.
You know, the Houses of Parliament, they're all this, the fight British for.
After all they did as well, eh? The Houses of Parliament.
It's a good point.
It is. It's a good point. Here's a new emergency question based on what we were talking about earlier. What do you think Lord Alan Sugar should call his autobiography? I came up with Aspoo Full of Sugar.
Aspoo?
Aspoo.
Oh, a spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, that is, it's a slow burner. He didn't choose it.
He asked you to do
it. He asked the public to come up with a title for his autobiography, which is lazy at best. And stupid at best as well.
Oh, shit, there's nothing... There's sugar on your tits? Excuse me? Is that sugar on your tits, Alan? I wouldn't want you meeting Pelé if that is sugar on your tits.
Sugar tits is quite... It's pretty sugar tits.
Do you like Alan Sugar?
I do have a sort of grudging respect for him, but I think he's ludicrous.
Yeah.
But on Twitter, I retweet every time he writes anything about Tottenham. So he either goes on Twitter and says, "Who knows what the Tottenham score is?" Which is A, stupid because he's on the internet, so he should be able to find that out quite easily. And B, he's got like thousands of followers, so all he's going to get is 1,000 people telling him the Stutt score. Yeah. Then he'll also go on Twitter and tell you what's happening. If he's watching the Tottenham game, he will commentate on it for you, as if you can't find out that information anywhere else. So I like to imagine that I'm providing a service where only Alan Sugar knows what's happening in the Tottenham game, and I retweet that for people who aren't following Alan Sugar. So, it's quite an esoteric, long-running joke on Twitter.
He's a talking walnut, isn't he? And he's got to be given credit.
Well, he takes himself very seriously, and he's a bit of a joke. So he's kind of an interesting... I mean, he's not really done anything that's been massively successful. You get the Amstrad emailing phone. My sister bought one of those. I did say that...
It was the Amstrad...
He's like, he had an Amstrad phone that you could email from the phone.
Don't know if you saw this.
Well, it was like sort of about this size. So it was a phone, but then you could also, there's a little screen and a keypad, I believe, if I'm describing it correctly, but a very small keypad. So you could, if you didn't have a computer and wanted to email people, you could email people from your phone. It didn't take off because people.
So you kind of go, look, actually, I won't say this next bit. Hold on. What do you reckon?
I don't think you even thought that far. That would be quite good. I'm just a bit bored of talking to you. You're still there. Yeah, I'm waiting for the email to come through. Okay, just hang on. It's hard to type on this tiny keyboard. It'll take me a little while to do it. Okay, well, that's good. That was a good title. Well, I'll send it in. He's chosen Unscripted as his title, which I think is a bad title.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you had to choose between dating a six-foot, a man who was a six-foot-tall penis...
Yes.
So it was just a basically a penis with a yep. face on it. Or a man who, instead of
is
a...
Is the face on the bell end or just on the shaft?
I think... It's on the bell end. It's on the...
So the bell end's not his hairstyle.
It sort of could be. It could be. His face is there. I imagine his face is on the non-banjo string side.
Right. Oh, the
banjo string could be like... The banjo string? Well, the banjo string could be like a little pigtail. And his face is there. So apart from that, it's just a massive penis.
Okay.
Or a normal man, except instead of a penis, he has a tiny man. Just a tiny man who's in place of his penis, who's a separate entity.
Forgive me for asking, but can you tell me anything about the personality of the little man? I'm just saying, is he like grumpy or?
I think he would be a bit grumpy because he's, you know, constantly in another man's pants, slightly rolled up. And if he is,
that would be his biography, wouldn't it? In another man's pants. Another year in an...
And he's presumably like rolled when the man's wearing trousers. He's just sort of crunched up inside the trousers, and even when he's hanging free, I'm presuming he's hanging upside down.
Yeah.
When the man's just walking around with nothing on, so I think the tiny man's pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
But you know, but probably would be delighted about the couple. It would be like going out with two people because you'd have the man and the tiny man.
I'm going to choose that.
Yeah.
Richard, very much so, because you couldn't go out and about with the penis character, could you? Really?
That's very judgmental of you.
Well, no, it would just seem like a promotional thing that you would. You're selling penis friends. I don't know.
Good. Well, that's good to know. I'm going to say it's a long time since I've done the emergency question, so I'm just trying to look at. I'll do a traditional.
Does
one.
That mean I've done bad if you've gone on to emergency?
No, it
questions?
Doesn't. People will be upset if I don't ask. What would it take for you to fillet the actor Keith Allen?
Keith, well, fuck off. Have you had dealings with him?
Yeah.
Well, let's just leave it at that. Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Honestly. Oh, but ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, honestly, really, he's one of these odd people who, in a social situation, gets his cock out.
He is.
And there's nothing that...
Is it... has he got anything to be proud of? Is it because he's got quite a big cock that he doesn't?
Well, no, and that is the weird thing.
Yeah.
Has Keith Allen put his in your drink?
No.
Honestly, you're a thirsty man. Oh, but it's terrible, isn't that? The oddest thing.
It is odd, yeah. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No, I've never seen a ghost.
No.
I was in the presence of an old fat mate once who was still dead.
Right.
Yeah. Still fat, standing above me. But that's a ghost, isn't it, really?
That is a ghost.
Fuck yeah.
If they're dead and they're there and they're interacting with you, that's a ghost.
Yeah. I don't remember it very, very well, and he's called Fat Harry.
Right.
Fat Harry Harriman. And, I'm going to change my answer if that's illegal.
It's allowed. You're allowed to change halfway through. It makes me suspicious that you've just made that up.
No, honestly.
Okay.
In Middlesbrough, it was again.
In Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
Because there was a ghost in my grandparents' bedroom, but I think it was just my brother We there was like a little is it called a Zed bed or something? The little stowaway bed that he used to sleep on when I slept in the other bed when we were in there, and I think it had a little thing that you could twirl around, but he always said there was a ghost. So it might have been a real ghost.
So this is just a Velcro strap or something?
It was like a little metal thing that you could turn around. It was in Middlesbrough. It's full of dead people and very miserable dead people who lived and then died.
So people selling Zed beds now, there'll be a little strap on it and say, this guy's got the Middlesbrough ghost, of course.
It could be. I won't ask you the Lou Sanders questions. Let me have a look at my questions. See, that's what emergency questions are to stop me doing this. Are you ever mistaken for Bob Mortimer, the Christian evangelist who lives in Gig Harbour, Washington, who's a triple amputee and motivational speaker?
Well, I can only be honest.
No. Never had an email through for him. I wish I had him on. I have to go see Sounds. I might try and get him on next.
I've heard he's often mistaken for me, though.
Imagine people thought, we've got Bob Mortimer.
Where's Vic, mate?
He's still got one limb. I'm not sure which limb it is. I don't know. I can't remember which one it is.
If he's evangelical, it's probably the arm.
He was a drug addict and he was in... Are you ever mistaken for Bob Mortimer, the English footballer from 1908 to 1965, who was York City's top scorer in the 1938-9 season?
No.
No.
No, I occasionally have genuinely been mistaken for the actor Kevin Spacey.
Have you?
Really, yeah. I've had conversations with him. I've had an autograph returned because I'm not him. And I've sat in the waiting room at Waterloo East with someone thanking me for all my good work at the Old Vic.
Right. And you thought they meant the Old Vic. And he's not that old.
Though that could have happened, couldn't it? You're still with Vic? No, I wouldn't. Yeah. I don't go to the theatre. Fuck it. No, I mean, fuck it. I went to see a play once at the Old Vic. I don't know what it's about.
Yeah, well, like
the experience.
But if you see a good play, it's good. But there's a lot of really bad ones. I did one last year. apparently wasn't any good.
Who said it wasn't any good?
Well, the public with their refusal to come and watch it. I suppose they didn't know. They didn't come and see it. So
exactly, yeah.
Might have been good, and they just didn't know about it.
What was it called?
I Killed Rasputin.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
It was all right.
It's not really a big sell, Richard, but all right.
It's never going to happen again. I was quite pleased with it, but, you know. I only lost £45,000 putting on it. It's not a big deal. So... could have bought a house in Middlesbrough for that. You are right, yes. Yes. So I'd rather have done the play.
What were you thinking of? You see, you're 45 grand, I'll do that. I'll put that towards that project.
Yeah.
Nothing cautioned you, no?
I thought, it didn't lose all the, you know, I put more than 45,000. I thought more people would come because I thought that it was Edinburgh. I thought 100 people a day would definitely come, so that was one thing. And then I was doing a stand up show at the same time, and I thought that usually makes money now, so that'll make some money. But I didn't make any money either. So let's not bring it. I'm going to cry. But it's all right. I've been on tour. The tour did all right. It's fine. Yeah. There's a website called Dirty Britcom Confession. Are you aware of this?
I know nothing of it.
No, where comedy fans give their sexual fantasies about comedians. There's quite a lot for you. They're mainly about having threesomes with you and Vic. This is the most interesting one. I'm seeing whether you'd be interested in this. I mean, it's hard to do because it's a past version of yourself. I want to take the big night out era, Vic and Bob, chain them together by their nipples, put them in a room and watch. It's a short chain.
a short chain.
Yeah, there's chaining your nipples together. So you're quite, you'd be quite face to face with Vic.
Well, it doesn't do it for me, is that what?
Well, I don't know if that would put him off. I don't know if you would have to be in it, or if just the two of you standing there going, this is a bit weird.
Yeah.
I'm not really enjoying this. So I don't know if they would be there furiously masturbating. Or whether you would have to be like going, I like being chained by the nipples to you. It's kind of an odd thing.
It's not doing it for me.
No.
It's not doing it for me. If someone had said, I'm more than willing to, if anyone would like me to run on the shoreline in a massive pair of underpants shouting Gandhi. So a bit of poetry there, isn't it? Did that come up?
That isn't there yet, but it might be there. I think they might have closed it to entries for the moment, but do go and put that up, and then you might that might come true. Shooting Stars, of course. I wanted to ask you about Will Self on Shooting Stars, because Will Self has been saying that he was really funny on Shooting Stars and you would always cut out all of his jokes in the edit. Is that...
I wouldn't think it was true.
My feeling is...
I don't know...
Do you edit the show? Do you edit those shows, or do you just do them and walk away?
Well, we used to do about we sometimes brought them in like about 34 minutes, which is tight. But we used to do them like between about 40 and 50 minutes.
Right.
So there's not a great deal taken out of it. But I don't remember Will. Is that what he said?
Yeah, he was saying recently that he was annoyed that you. He said he was very funny on it, but you took out all of his. He seemed to not enjoy being the team captain as so much.
Well, it seemed fun at the time. That's a shame. It did seem... I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
Do
you still see Will Self forever?
No. But I never did. No. I'm not as frightening, Will. Will's... He's bright as a button, you know, and massive. And my memories of him... I'm sure he was probably edited the same way that Mark Lamar was.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
It was always an interesting mix of, again, it's just a really clever mix of different types of people. So it's kind of the idea of having Will Self on that show in itself is a masterpiece idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's not the kind of person you'd expect.
I mean, it's not terribly thought through. When we did the Big Night Out as a pub thing, the second half of it was a quiz, which was called the Big Quiz. And we had all these like questions left over. We'd never used the big quiz on telly. And I'm trying to think, why did I start? We did the show. We did a night on BBC where they said, "Will you do the whole New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve or something?"
Yeah.
And we didn't have anything particularly to do, so we said, "Well, we'll do a quiz." And it, just the very day we said that, we did a show called The Word. And Mark Lamar said, "Oh, I'm getting sacked from this tomorrow." And we said, "Well, we're doing a quiz." Like, next week. It was kind of, it was the same with Ulrika. She did quite something that's quite popular on YouTube, where she started laughing her head off during the weather.
Yeah.
And she got the giggles, and that like happened that week.
Nice.
And we thought, well, she seems fun, and we got in. You know, there wasn't any science behind that. I can't remember why we chose Will. Can't remember.
I suppose it seems like, if you've got Mark Lamar and Mark Lamar's not there, it seems like a kind of Mark Lamar-like
That's
presence.
Probably the process we went through, who's like Mark, yeah.
Yeah. And Mark wasn't doing it because he was doing Buzzcocks, so that was the reason he did.
I can't remember why Mark popped in. Do you know Mark?
A little bit, but only from years ago again, yeah.
I mean, that's Mark, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't do it like, I can't remember it, but I imagine one week he said, that's it, I'm not doing it anymore, so. Which is a shame.
It's an amazing show, and I think I was looking at a clip with Frank Boff, where Frank Boff, you've called him Frank Boff, B-O-F-F on his, and then he really gets upset about it. He doesn't get that it's a joke, I think. Do you remember this bit?
I can't remember it.
He's going, "Well, you boys are very clever, and I thought this show would be good, but should tell you my name is spelled B-O-U-G-H, not... you've misspelled my name." You're going, "Oh, it's Boff."
I remember we had a difficult show. Chris Rea was on.
Right.
Why is it funny? Chris Rea was on.
And
Ulrika was the team captain, and Chris Rea just sat like that. Say nothing for the whole show, and when we finished, I said, because I knew Chris Rea a bit, but the people said, I said, what's the matter, Chris? You've got a cob on, haven't you? And we had no idea that he'd returned from some tour or something, and Ulrika had spread the rumour that had got into the papers that he'd got AIDS. Because they lived in the same village. And he had no idea that, you know, Chris being that he's not a telly, he had no idea that this Ulrika woman was on this show.
Did he have AIDS? Why did she say he had AIDS?
And it turned out he had pancreatic cancer. I don't know how well you know that disease, that particular cancer, ladies and gentlemen, but it does lead to terrible weight loss. Because the only way you can process stuff is by super exercise.
Right.
Super exercise. With fire pony. I mean, it was the best thing for us with Shooting Stars, was meeting these people, because the guests were just a wish list. It was I'd love to meet him.
And did everyone go along? Because, I mean, again, it's these surreal endings where bears are being sent down zip-wise into people's faces, or, what, you know, they all go, they know what was going to happen, and they all go along with it.
No, we never told them what the end game would be, because right. lots of them wouldn't have done it. But, like, there was no way... We had Richard E. Grant on. There was no way he would have done the punishment. But you'll know from telly, if you come the crunch, and we tell Ulrika, say, choose Richard.
Yeah.
So, choose Richard E. Grant. So I'm going to choose Richard. And his face was like, you fucking... But in front of an audience, you can't say no. So you've got them. So there was quite a few reluctant... players.
Yeah.
But
I don't think it ever felt like, it always felt like an inclusive thing. It didn't feel like you could do something like that. And some TV shows do things like that and you feel these are people being bullied or people made to look stupid. To me, it always felt like it was an inclusive thing.
Yeah, I don't know. People would come back and ask to do it again and things. But I mean, it's like, it's weird what telly does to you in that sense, because there was a dancer off Strictly Come Dancing.
Right.
And me and Jim, it's being little kids. But we didn't like him. He's maybe called Brendan or... Yeah, he's Australian, I think, or something.
There is one called Brendan. So,
and we just, you know, stupidly took that, like, we didn't think he... didn't like him. And we had a game where... we do it a lot in what we do. You pick up something like a steel bar and it's real.
Yeah.
But you drop it and pick up the one next to it, which isn't. And we were dropping whole Edam cheeses on him. And we had the false ones. And for some reason on that, fuck it. Fuck this. Fuck this Brendan man. From that fucking dancing show. And Edam has got a bit of heft to it, you know. Because he's fucking Brendan from that, he took him.
Yeah,
which was almost sweeter. And we laid a massive turkey on someone that had gone completely rank. In hanging, I can't remember who that was, but no, people. Sorry, people were fine with it. Yeah, definitely speaking.
Apart from when you decided to take vengeance on.
There was just that one
cheese-based vengeance.
That fucking Brendan. He might not be called Brendan.
Do you know
the one I mean?
Yeah. Brendan Cole. Yeah.
Brendan Cole. He turned out he's really nice as well. Really nice.
Oh, I've got to ask. I've got a new thing called Cash for Questions, where someone's given me some cash to ask you a question. This is Nick Gage has paid £60 to ask you. He's paid I'm trying to work out what it is about.
Why are you running here, Richard?
He's paid about a quarter of George's wages for George. Right. George, the sound guy, who can't turn the sound on properly. So we might discount that from his. It's just because we wanted to film it this time and we couldn't afford to film it, so we've made people pay for things. You know, it's changed the whole tone.
Well,
of the
I was burgled last week or week before, and on the net. Have you seen these wireless cameras you can get that connect to your phone?
Yeah.
And I don't want to put him out of a job or whatever, but it's HD quality.
Yeah.
And you could just put it there like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'd notice the difference.
No.
I don't think so. What they do now for an ID parade is because the wife came downstairs and the burglar was in the living room and he ran away and she said, I know what he looks like. And like in my days when I was a solicitor, it was just you get 10 people, it got to be the same colour, but you get just 10 blokes, can you pick them out? But now they go to like this video suite where you get, so there was 8, I think it was, and they have to be the same age, same hairstyle,
right,
and so on. And it's impossible. Quite, absolutely impossible. My wife was so frustrated because he's burgled us so many times. Because our security is shit. And but do you know the thing, Richard, when you like people look so different on video? I met Pat Cash the other day. I had no idea it was Pat Cash.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea, because I'd only seen Pat Cash on video, on telly.
Yeah.
Very different in the real life, Pat Cash.
Did Pat Cash burgle you?
Sorry.
You're saying Pat Cash was the burglar, he burgled you.
Well, but it just seems the strangest system. Yeah. We're going to show you him, but he won't look like him because he's on video.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
anyway, just, I'm not wanting to like crush down on civil liberties or anything like that.
No. Anyway, this is the question. Nick Gage has asked this question. It's quite a hard question to answer, so don't feel you have to. It's not. I mean, it's not. You know.
He wants 60 quid's worth of answers.
He does. As a former small Welsh child, this is him, and I usually have Welsh children write my questions for me. The Welsh for microwave is pop de ping. Can you think of any more kitchen appliances that would have an amusing translation? It's quite a hard question.
That is a question. Currently,
it
would be my dishwasher, which I call the fucker. Same old, you know what I mean, later. Have you ever known it not with your dishwasher? Beep, beep, beep. What's wrong this time?
They do beep a lot. Apparently you can turn that beep off if you're clever. But
it's got a stop on it.
Yeah.
It won't go any further. Beep, turn the beep off.
Yeah.
It's just watching you saying, yeah, whatever.
I do have a dishwasher-based emergency question. It's a new one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that works out quite well. It's like we scripted this. The other day, my mother-in-law put a quite sharp knife up, point upwards in the dishwasher, and I never do that. I don't put them in the dishwasher.
Yeah.
But I kind of nearly killed myself. You know, I nearly just cut my wrists on that. Do you have any feelings about cutlery in how cutlery should be placed?
Well, I do. I do, Richard.
Yeah.
Do you know on the top drawer?
Yeah.
There's the little flaps at the side.
Yeah.
I lay them.
Oh, do you?
Blade towards the
so
back.
So that's just the sharp knives, or all knives?
Just the sharp fellas.
With your regular cutlery that isn't so sharp, do you put the knives all in the same compartment, or the spoons all in the same compartment?
No, I'm willy-nilly mixing it together, but I put the metal end up.
Yeah. Because otherwise, when you take them out, you've got your handprints all over the pointy end.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That is the correct answer. There is, you can buy. So, well, I've written a newspaper article about this question. It's one of the most controversial newspaper columns I wrote. So I thought we'd bring it into the. A lot of people got involved. You can now buy a special tray that you can put into the top that is sideways on, and you can put all your cutlery in sideways and put that in the top. Would you be interested in having one of those?
I wouldn't be interested in it. No, I think it's adequate nooks and crannies for all your needs.
But I think the problem with that is it takes up a lot of space.
Do you believe in Calgon? Do you really think something's fucking about with your washing machine that Calgon's going to get on top of?
I've never had an issue with limescale in my dishwasher, I don't think.
They just go on and on, don't they? The drum will break or the belt.
Yeah.
But I've never had someone come round and say you've got that central mid failure due to some build-up that Calgon would have sorted if he hadn't been.
I always think when I see that the cost of buying the Calgons over the lifetime of the machine would add up to more than the cost of a new machine
by
the time you get to it. So I always think that is a that, you know, unless you care about the earth and don't want to use up too many washing machines.
But your ship, but
what, break it,
Calgon?
Yeah.
If it's so fucking powerful in it, right? Do you really want to be spewing Calgon out into the world?
That's true. And in your clothes and your dishes.
Imagine if you did. If Calgon penetrated every bit of machinery and equipment, it would all work perfectly forever. And then everything would go bust, wouldn't it? You know, like the white suit thing, the Peter Sellers film.
Yeah, it could. And if it got into the water base, into the land, yes, all lime would be destroyed.
A world without lime.
There'd be no chalk or anything. All of that stuff would get all the same, wouldn't it?
Shit,
lime scale, chalk.
Well, lime is, you're looking at plastering that whole industry.
The Mendips.
Yeah.
The Mendips.
Body disposal. Yeah. Fucking Calgon.
When I first moved to Cheddar, there was a shed at the back of the garden, which was where the Thrilling Three used to meet up, for people who remember that reference. But there was a big thing of lime there that I became quite, like a big tray of lime underneath the workbench. I became quite obsessed with, and I dug it all out looking to see what had been in there. Yeah. And there was a lace lady's glove in there, which, you know, I didn't know at the time that lime could be used to dispose of bodies, but finding like a lace lady's glove inside some lime does suggest that was the murder scene somewhere. Never mentioned it until now, probably should have brought it up.
Have you ever thought about body disposal? Just like I said, just having a laugh, thinking about how you get rid of the wife. You know?
Yeah, I do think about things like this a lot. I don't know how, you know, I think you can probably chop them up and put them in the bins.
You just lob it in the bin?
Well, either bit by bit. You've got to decide, should I take the big punt and put it in one and hope that just gets in the back? Or should I do it like bit by bit?
Yeah.
It's going to take 3 or 4 different weeks. I'm going to have most of the dead body of my wife, say, in the house.
It wouldn't need to be your wife, but yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't need to be my wife. Just say it is my wife. I like my wife. But I think, you know, you could probably get, if you put like a hand in there, in amongst your regular rubbish.
I mean, if it was your wife, I don't know it wouldn't be your wife.
No.
But if it was your wife, if you were to not have a frenzied attack, they'd immediately think it was a stranger attack.
Yeah.
So as long as you were up to doing one of those appeals, you know, please come home. Everybody misses you.
Don't you think they only do those appeals if they think the person did it?
You get that feeling, don't you?
I think they make you do it. So if you're ever in that situation, and I hope you're not, Bob. Yeah. I really hope you're not. I may hope, you know, no one close to you dies, but also I hope you don't become a suspect in the crime.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you.
But if you are, and they say, will you do an appeal, just say, no, I won't do it, because that is them watching you like a hawk, then watching you.
It's the greatest hindsight TV you can get, in it.
Yeah.
When you subsequently find out they did it and they show it, and it's so obvious that there's no tears.
It would be hard. I think even if you're a brilliant actor, that would be a hard role to go, right, I've got to play the part of someone who didn't kill this person. And also, you know, look upset.
Yeah.
No, I'm not upset, I'm glad I'm killing them, I'm glad they're dead.
Yeah.
If you had to commit a terrorist atrocity, what, have you got any ideas for that? Because I plan terrorist atrocities a lot.
Well, I certainly wouldn't attack the capital.
No.
I've always thought that's a weakness with all the security. Yeah. I would probably do somewhere like a Bradford or a Rotherham or Manchester, because the security is so much less. And I would use a sporting event or a shopping centre. No, every time, I would. And I think terrorists don't use it. It's something that I remember vividly from the coverage of Vietnam when I was young. You know the napalm, the petroleum jelly?
Yeah.
Stuff. Absolutely. I'm just saying. It's hypothetical.
How would you distribute the napalm? Because that's quite hard. It's quite a tricky substance to...
Do you have a shop called Smithies where you live?
No. Well, it's like a joke shop.
Yeah, and they sell these guns. Okay. Yeah. Or the super squirters.
Do you think napalm would be all right in such a... Wouldn't the napalm melt the super squirter?
No, 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 absolutely not. No more than petrol would do.
Okay.
No.
See, would the petrol melt the super... done quite a lot of research. Yes.
If you were to put polystyrene pellets in it as well, of course it would stick to people.
Right.
More.
It's true, you know, it's pretty easy to... I don't want to have a go at the terrorists, but it's pretty easy to kill quite a lot of people quite easily, quickly. Yeah. And most terrorist atrocities, I mean, 9/11, I'll give them that, that was a good one. They got a lot of people. I mean, yeah, from their point, I'm disapproving of what they did. Was wrong, but if you are coming from the point of view of I'm a terrorist, I want to kill as many people as possible, that was a good day for the terrorists. But all the others have been, you know, you could do work worse with a, you know, pointed stick, couldn't you?
Honestly? No, honestly, say someone like Spennymoor in County Durham, right, on the dog track of a Wednesday or something, they've got one turnstile, yeah? You could take everyone out, it's probably 200-250 Spennymoor residents. It would cripple. Spennymoor would be fucked. It would lose a whole generation. And think of the odourless greyhounds as well, wandering the streets. Not even out of the traps. Still, if you know that, if you laugh about it, that's the best way.
Laugh. And also, I hope, you know, that I give a lot of tips to terrorists in this, but I'm hoping that also that the security services are listening and thinking, oh, we better watch out for if Bob Marley goes and buys a lot of super soakers and polystyrene pellets, we'll keep an eye on him. So, you know, we're giving it a level playing field. At the moment, it's mainly terrorists listening in. I think I said this on the last one, the bonus one, take some Baroccas, but they're made of, like, whatever that stuff is that they put in the Oasis drink. Yeah. I put that and just then add water to that, yeah, and then you've got your explosives, then bang, blow on them. With a Barocca.
That would blow a plane.
Well, you know, they, you're not allowed to take Oasis on the plane, not the band, the drink. Because right. you can mix it. Not actual Oasis, like they put like chemicals in. The reason you can't take more than, you know, 100 millilitres on, because they had that plan, they were going to take Oasis bottles with coloured liquid in them, and then if you put the coloured liquid together, it creates a bomb big enough to blow a bit out of a plane.
Right.
But surely you could just make that Oasis chemical into a Barocca that looks like a Barocca, put a few of those in a Barocca, so you could take on loads, and then they've got water on the plane, you just put the water into the...
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you've ever handled, what is it, Semtex?
No.
If you've never handled it, I fucking challenge you to distinguish it from the exterior of a fig roll. No fucking chance. So, a little bit of fig paste in the middle of it. I'll tell you, man.
But that's why they make you
eat. Don't need to take over a plane.
But you can blow a hole in it. Or, like, because I've got a baby now, you just have a baby bottle full of the Oasis stuff, and they make you drink it.
Yeah.
But just have a little secret compartment at the top with milk in it that you drink, and then the rest is the bottom. Bang, blow. So I'm just trying to help the terrorists out. You know, I feel sorry they haven't done so well recently. So, you know, good luck. Good luck to them. You're going to go on tour.
Yeah.
In the autumn.
Yeah.
Everyone's going on tour now.
This autumn, everyone's going.
It did.
Yeah.
Well, last autumn, there was 120 comedians on tour. So, I think, you know, it edges the little guy like me out. But how many dates are you doing?
Well, we're doing 20-odd or something in November, and then we're doing some more the following year in the February.
Cool.
If we can make it, if we can still do it.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, 20 years since we've been on the stage.
Did you tour much back in the 90s?
Yeah,
you...
we used to do it every couple of years we'd tour.
Yeah. You'll enjoy it. It's all right. You know, it's fun, touring, but it's not as fun as it was. We were never too rock and roll on our tours.
We used to take guns and everything.
Did you?
I promise you, we used to take a gun. And... Yeah.
What did you do with the gun?
We used to go somewhere where no one could see us. So we've got a gun and film each other with it.
Are you going to have a big tour bus, or are you going to just be in
the... No, we're just... Jim's got... He's going in a... what's it called? Caravelle? Volkswagen Caravelle?
Okay.
And he's just sleeping at the gigs. It's his intention. And I like to go Holiday Inn. I like Holiday Inn, but...
Holiday Inn is, that's a good level.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting. I think Premier Inn, Holiday Inn is about the right level.
I wouldn't go down to a travel lodge.
No. And you really shouldn't. I've told the story on this before, but the last time I was in a Travelodge, and I'd never stay in a Travelodge again, there was someone else's bogey on my shower curtain when I went. And then, you know, I couldn't be bothered to complain about it, but then just when I had a shower, I had to kind of push the... And then I was sitting down in the bar thinking there's a bogey in my room. Yeah. Someone else's bogey in my room.
Yeah. I mean, I was a bad lad in the time, and I always used to urinate in me kettle in the in the hotel. But
oh, that's what I did.
Because I couldn't be bothered to go to the toilet.
It's and not then, that far to the toilet, though, is it? So you were like, essentially as a bedpan, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You just hold it in the bed and wee in it.
Yeah.
Then put it by the side.
Usually because I'm reading a book.
Yeah.
But it was the same tour, the same time Bottom were touring.
Yeah.
And nearly all the rooms that me and Vic got were Aid and Rick were getting.
Right.
The night after. And I never apologised. Jennifer Saunders approached me about it.
Yeah.
She was all right about it.
It's good for you, apparently. Yeah. I don't know if you're drinking other people's wee.
Did you ever do Just for Laughs in Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you find that it was just laughs?
I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I've been three times, I think. Me and Stu did it in the 90s, and I've been once on my own, and I found it. But I'm terrible in those situations, which is why, you know, I just have to do my own TV shows in a theatre being filmed by some men who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Did you and Stuart bomb there? On
no, that? We did all right, but I just didn't like the whole atmosphere of it. It's such a trade fair, much more than, say, Edinburgh is. It's like, literally, you go back to the hotel and all the agents and all the TV people, and they're all trying to sign people up to it. And I was never interested in it. They were interested in taking Stu, you know, Stu went the second... I didn't want to go the second time we went, but Stu had loads of interest from, like, American producers and stuff about writing or being on TV in America. And I only wanted to be on TV in England or Britain. And so I really reluctantly went back. It's the only time Stu ever really wrote all the scripts because I didn't want to.
We absolutely bombed.
Yeah,
absolutely bombed. We sang a song called we Jim came on and said he got a lucky charm or something.
Right.
I said, well, that sounds like that's terrific news, Vic, that you've got something that brings you luck. And he said, yeah. And I said, what is it? And he said, it's like a carpet. And he had a 30-foot roll of carpet. And he sang to this Canadian audience that this is me lucky carpet. I bought it in the market. And there were, you could almost feel, so it's a fucking carpet. That can't be lucky. How do you carry that around with you all of that? Oh, we bombed. We walked off. I've never seen Jack D and Eddie Izzard happier in the band. Fucking Eddie was beaming.
But also, it's so slick there. So there's a lot. All the stand-ups and all the American stand-ups especially were really just trying to get on the sitcoms. So they were actors who had learned a 5-minute routine to the point of every. So like they would, if you watch them two nights in a row, it was exactly the same. They would get onto a stool at one point, step off. A guy was doing a joke. This is my abiding memory. It made a mistake halfway through the joke. Said, "Oh, excuse me," and started the joke again. Right, so like, and any stand-up would go, oh, I fuck that up, and either try and get out of it or make a joke about it. He was like, oh, excuse me, and then, you know, took two or three steps back so he was in the right place, and then just started telling the joke again as if nothing had happened.
Yeah.
And so they were like actors rather than...
No, it's really joyless, isn't it?
Yeah,
as well? I mean, it was a lesson to learn, seeing comedy done like fucking, like really properly.
Yeah.
But for me and Jim, like, it is incredible, isn't it, the craft of some of those American ones. But it left us.
But that's the weird, you know. It's such a weird thing, isn't it? Where like an act in one place, everyone gets it, and it's either a local thing or it is that complicity with the audience. The audience have to be on side with you, and so you can be the funniest person in one place, and then you go somewhere else, and then just going, this is just a man with a carpet. That's not. it's not amusing. I pass a carpet shop every day, and there's a man with lots of carpet.
He doesn't seem that lucky. He's got a closing down sale. I mean, Harry and Paul bombed that year as well, and that was an odd one, because they did Smashy and Nicey, which was a well-honed thing.
Yeah.
And there was a Canadian American audience just watching it, saying they're just two DJs.
Yeah.
We're doing it for charity. Yeah. What's the joke here? No, it was that was it was it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate it out there, but I'll give it another go. If I can be the funny butler in some sitcom in America, that's all I want now. Well, I think we might have to stop in a sec because we've got to do another one. It's been really nice though. We don't have to. I might ask you one more.
I enjoy talking about the washing machine, the dishwasher.
Yeah.
And the terrorism best.
Yeah, they were some of my high points. It all goes out though. That's the thing with this. There's nothing gets edited out unless you feel embarrassed by anything you've said that was litigious. Wouldn't you just go on about Avalon for 15 minutes?
Have you got a grudge?
No. It was a very in joke for five people in this room probably. But
have you got a grudge, Richard?
No, I'm with. I'm still with Avalon.
Really?
Yeah. Let's not do this again.
You're with Avalon?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah.
Man and boy. I'm a very loyal person.
You happy with Avalon?
I'm happy.
Are you happy with this?
Well, I think I'm as happy as I would be anywhere else.
My agent's 10%.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I'd take 10% of you over 15% of me. You run your own production company.
But do they treat you differently
to everyone else?
Yeah.
I've not gotten that much of a problem. They've been good to me, I think, and they let me do this. We're probably going to cut this out again.
Sorry.
I wish I'd never brought it up. We'll talk about it backstage.
I mean, I don't mind you saying you're a terrorist. Yeah. Say you're with Avalon. But it really beggars belief. It really does.
If you had to choose between having a tit that dispensed talcum powder...
A tit. Yes.
Or a finger that could travel through time.
Finger travels through time, yeah.
Which would you choose out of those two things?
Tit that dispenses.
Yeah, talcum powder. You got that much talcum powder as you want. Infinite supply of talcum powder.
Full infinite. Fuck.
Or a finger that can travel... Only your finger can travel through time, but it can go anywhere you want it to go.
And does it return...
Yeah, well, you're still controlling it. It's there, but it's just in touch. Like there, it's gone through the vortex.
And I touch things in the future.
Yeah, or the past. Yeah, the future or the past. Should change the past with your finger?
I'd like to touch the past. Thank you very much. I did that very much.
It's
like strum on a lute or something. I'm quite enticed by that. And into the future, when finally we get fucking jetpacks, I'll be able to touch one of them.
You could turn someone's jetpack off. Right, I think we better go. But ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a massive round of applause to Bob Mortimer?
Thank you, everyone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. Do come and say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.